Hello and welcome to The Inner Gamer, episode 161. We are your weekly dose of video game news, reviews, opinions, and discussions made for and by our listeners. My name is Brett Janoski.
I'm Devin DeRee, and Luis is here kinda and kinda not. He's here for part of it, but for not part of it.
He had a run out for home cooking.
Which, I'll be honest, I would bail on you so hard right now if I had home cooking.
I know.
Like, waiting on me.
It makes me sad to realize that I'm not as good as home cooking. Terrible. Well,
Brett, you're never going to be good as home cooking, like, ever.
Some bullshit.
But anyways, man. On our episode this week, we don't play a whole lot of games. It was surprisingly a little bit of a slower week, but we talk a little bit about Owlboy and Shovel Knight on the Switch, and then Luis will give us his thoughts on Dragon Quest Builders. Moving into our gaming news, some interesting stuff. Gabe Newell has some fun stuff coming from Valve. Nintendo Direct is released. The video game montage that the White House released was a hot mess, and we'll tell you why. Fortnite Battle Royale coming to the mobile, and then Call of Duty Black Ops 4 has been officially announced. Moving into our discussion topic, we're talking about Ubisoft this week. They've got a business model, and while sometimes their games may not always be the best, we're going to talk about their business model up to this point, how it's working, what we are liking, and maybe what we can change for the future. So with that, let's cue that music. Welcome to the Inner Gamer.
It is March 13th, 2018. Welcome to the Inner Gamer Podcast. If you enjoy this podcast, we love for you to support us on Patreon. For as little as $12 a year, you can make this podcast better, and we'll give you some goodies along the way. Or you can give us a one-time donation of $12, which will be just as effective.
Don't limit it
to
12. Give us
the money even faster. Or $50, like
Why
I said last
week.
Why
limit it to 12?
We can make it 100.
There could be like some bored millionaire out there who's just like, I would love to give some of this money away.
How about, because it's 2018, everybody goes out there and gives us a single donation of $2,018. That would be great.
It's a little aggressive.
You like
don't
that?
You think?
Sales tactics, man. You say
or
2018, they'll give us
$2,000 donations.
Or $2,018 donations. I like that too.
I think that's a little bit better.
I think that's Luis using his noodle right there.
Hell yeah. Mm. Let's talk about some video games, boys. Guys.
Boys.
Whatever you
I'm
are.
A boy.
I'm a man. I'm a man. I'm a real boy.
So I've been out of town, so
you
I haven't
played Jack.
Played much of anything.
Yeah. What did you say about Ohio, Devin? Sorry, Brett. What did you say about Ohio?
It was cold. I flew into a blizzard. It was awesome. I was visiting my grandmother for her 90th birthday. And I flew into a blizzard where I couldn't see the ground. It was so foggy and snowy that we couldn't see the ground until we were about to land.
That's and all of a little sudden, terrifying.
We just, like,
all land.
Right. I was like, okay, this is cool. And then I look around me and there's literally like 6 inches of snow on the ground. I'm like, shit, we have to drive in this. And it's 1 o'clock in the morning. I'm tired. I'm ready to get home and sleep. So I didn't play my video games. I played a little Golf Story and some Celeste, and that's about it. So
you're a Celeste.
I am a Celeste.
Oh, wait, hold on. Okay.
Yeah.
I'm going to set this now. We will not say the word Celeste next week.
Okay.
We've said it like 12 casts in a row. We got to stop.
I'm going to take the blame on that one. That's all my fault. That's all me. I'm so
sorry.
Well,
really, we can just say Devin can't say it anymore.
That's fine.
That's fair.
No, that's fair.
There's a lot of things we should say Devin can't say.
No. Nah,
like
nah,
Dark Souls.
No. Nah, nah. You shut your mouth. You shut your stupid mouth.
Yeah.
I will pace myself from here on out.
Bloodborne.
Nope. Got to talk about that because that's out this week on the PS Plus.
PS shit, Plus. That's right. Not to pick that shit up.
Yeah, you are because you're going to have to play it with me.
Hell yeah.
Okay.
All right, cool.
Hold you to it.
So Devin, what have you been playing?
I can't stop playing my Switch, guys. I have a really bad problem. Like
that's another word he can't say anymore.
I can't stop.
Problem? Oh, Switch. Never mind.
Yeah.
Ignore me.
Ignore me. No, I have been playing two games on my Switch, and they've been magnificent. Owlboy, which I talked a little bit about last time, and I finished it.
You finished it?
Yeah, much like Celeste, it got me very emotional and I didn't anticipate it. Like, it really touched on like kind of a personal spot for me, from like, you know, a paternal relationship kind of thing going on. And I got to say, I was at work not expecting to get a little weepy eyed at work during my lunch break, but here we are. Yeah, it's fantastic. It's magnificent. And I know I, as usual, Luis, I will concede a point that you are right, as always, because I also picked up Shovel Knight. And yeah, it's my first time playing Shovel Knight.
Really?
Yeah.
I'm shocked by that, actually.
It is one of the absolute best video game soundtracks I've ever heard in my life.
I've heard
that.
It's so good.
Yeah.
And
ba-na-na-da, 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 ba-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na
I think what kind of deterred me from playing it when I first heard about it was just the silly factor that you see, like Shovel Knight. Come on, he's a knight with a shovel. What is this?
I mean, you just played Owlboy.
Shut your fucking mouth. There's a level of willing suspension of disbelief I'm willing to follow around with an absurdity. But I don't know why it was, but I finally got into it and it's magnificent. I'm on the last level and I cannot stress how fun it is.
Wait, hang on. So context here. So you're playing Shovel Knight. Are you playing the Treasure Trove one? Like the thing that's like a whole bunch of them?
Yeah.
So you're on the last level of
The
first one.
Okay. I was like, whoa, you're on the last level.
Yeah, like, altogether, there should be about like 45 to 50 hours of just solid gameplay, but you can play them again because they're basically score attack. Yeah. You can just go really fast.
Yeah, that's the idea, is I'm going to do that and see exactly like how much I've played it.
It's good, man. So it's good. It's a great Mega Man hybrid.
So it's so good.
It's based on, excuse me, it's based on like combat and platforming, right? Mm-hmm. Like it's a mix of general platforming and then fighting bad guys and making sure that you kill them. And the score is based around is it based around both the combat and the speed at which you complete the level, or
it's like, how many coins you get? Yeah, so it's all about you can go coins. Yeah, you can go super slow if you want, but the speed makes it the best.
Yeah, the speed is what kind of makes
going
it really
fast
fun.
Makes it awesome.
It's because you know the part of the platforming is all about how you manipulate your shoveling abilities. You know, do you do a down attack to bounce off people, or do you just use your you know, you can get a gauntlet that helps you punch through bricks that helps you like progress you across a level really fast. All of it uses magic and shit. So, I mean, there's a lot of different elements of how you can use it, like your abilities as well as just your basic shovel ability. So, I mean, it's just super fun. Like I wish I'd gotten this like way back when it was like first released, because I'm having a blast.
That's awesome.
Well, no, you can still play everything. I think they finally released the last part of it, so you should have all the way. Scepter Knight is even better, or Specter Knight, whichever it is. That one's even better than Shovel Knight, so that one's, I think, the third one. You can you basically play as every knight, so you've already gotten to the point where you know all the knights, right?
Yeah.
You can play as five or six of them, and they're all different. So it's just a good game, dude. It's solid. Like, it's just a perfect mix of all the things that make a 2D platformer good these days.
How much was it?
Like $25.
$25 for the full pack.
Mother uckers. That's awesome.
And again, that's I just have to applaud everything that Nintendo does with this, just because the price point is perfection.
Right. Very cool.
And I can carry it around with me everywhere.
Everywhere you go, even on
the
plane.
Now I'm going to want to play Shovel Knight again.
Dude, it's so good.
Well, I think I need to buy Celeste first. Well, I guess I'll just keep playing this next game that I've been playing.
Yeah, so this next game.
What have
game,
you been playing?
Tell us.
Well, I actually just started playing it, and at the request of my brother, who knows that I like these weird, quirky RPG types, Dragon Quest Builders. So Dragon Quest has basically been a series forever, since like the days of the Nintendo and Super Nintendo. And Dragon Quest has mostly been kind of, you know, it kind of stayed in Japan for a long time. Like, there's been a few that have made their way over, like Dragon Quest 7 and 8, which I played on the PlayStation 2. And those are traditional RPGs, turn-based RPGs with, like, you You know, you kind of run through the world and then, you know, something happens and then you have to get into a battle, right? So Dragon Quest Builders basically says, nah, take that shit out of here. And we're going to mix together an open world-ish RPG with build mechanics like Minecraft. So it's basically like a isometric top-down Minecraft RPG, like action RPG hybrid. And basically what you do is you go out into the world, you fight monsters, you do quests, you collect stuff, collect materials, and then you can use those to build up like a home base. You can use it to build up to get to different parts of the environment. You can use it to build like, you know, like a fort so you can fight other monsters. So it's just a mix of like the things that make Minecraft super unique in the build aspect, but also kind of embedding that into an action RPG. So you're like this little chibi character running around and like hitting shit and like the blocks break and then you go and build stuff out of that. And that could be anything from, you know, just a small little house, or you can merge materials together and that makes something else. So, I mean, that's all really I've played for now. I've only played about an hour. But if that thing that theme continues throughout, I can imagine myself playing this game for a good amount of time, man.
Is this a full price game?
No, I don't think so. I think it's, I want to say it's $39.99.
Gotcha.
Or still not bad.
Or $50. Yeah, yeah. And it seems like it's a very in-depth game. It's gotten fantastic reviews. And apparently the Switch port is like the port to play because it's the Switch.
Yeah.
It seems like most ports of onto the Switch are the best. But it's really stylized. You have to like the Dragon Quest world. Like, I'm sure anybody who's ever played any video game ever can recognize the blue slime, which is from Dragon Quest.
Yes.
Or like the Golem, or actually the villain is pretty recognizable too. He's like this weird, like clown looking witch character. Kind of looks like Mr. Mime. But yeah, I like it a lot. I don't think it's necessarily a game for everyone, but there is a demo on the Switch Shop. You can't save your progress, I don't think, or at least you can't transfer your progress onto the full game when you play it, but it's the full game, essentially, so you can play up to a certain point.
Okay.
If you're on the fence, man, you should definitely try it out, because it is fun. It's like something you could easily jump into for a little bit, say, I'm going to do this, that, and then just put it down, and it seems like there's a lot of levels to it as well.
Yeah. That's awesome. So I'm really glad that you said demo, because it just reminded me that I did play something new.
Was Kirby it a Star demo?
Allies. Did you guys play Kirby Star Allies? Yeah.
No, I haven't, dude. I want to. My brother told me to play it.
Dude, so I've never played a Kirby game before. So I didn't really, I mean, I knew.
Are you really? Are you serious?
I played Kirby in Smash Brothers, but I've never played an actual Kirby game.
Just another platformer, bro.
Yeah, it's just another platformer. But this is, I'm really curious to see how this co-op stuff comes into play, because I love the whole mechanic behind this game is you are Kirby and you can go up to other characters and you can, like, say you have a guy who breathes fire out. You can go up to this enemy, you can suck him into your body and then feed him out again. And basically he becomes your friend and you've made this friend and now he follows you. So you can have up to four, like three of those other characters of different types and varietals. So there's a fire breathing guy, there is a sword and shield guy, there is a person that shoots out ice crystals and things like that. So you can collect all of them and have them fight alongside you. And then when one's about to die or has died or whatever, you can just suck up another one and basically creates this other character to follow you. And then whenever you're playing co-op, you can have your friends play as those other characters as you're fighting through these platforming levels. And I think that's such an interesting
That's a really
twist.
Weird way to do co-op. Yeah. I mean, I dig it.
Yeah. It's a really, really neat concept. And it's a gorgeous game. Like the visuals, I mean, I remember seeing the videos and I was like, okay, this is really, really neat. But the way that they have kind of like a soft focus in the background, like shallow depth of field going on.
Yeah.
And very bright colors, great animation, some pretty complex platforming, more so than I thought it would be. I mean, it's simple enough to grasp, but like there's a lot of complexity here, I think, that can be discovered. Because different characters have different effects on things. So like the burning fire has different effects on this thing versus the ice character or whatever. And there's boss battles, which are pretty cool. I fought this big, huge, massive tree thing that was really hard to fight. Not bad. It was a doable fight, but I was playing like the easy level. So there's also a hard level on the demo that I haven't played yet. But I was pleasantly surprised. I was not really sure what to think of Kirby, and I didn't think I'd buy it, but I think I might pick this one up now that I played the demo. It definitely caught my attention.
I'm very pleased to hear about you playing a Kirby game now.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm pleased myself.
I'm pleased with myself.
I'm pleased with myself. And I love that they're doing these demos again on freaking a Switch, because nobody else does demos ever, but I've converted to a purchase by playing demos on at least three games on the Switch. Like, a demo's available, I download it, I play it, I'm like, damn, this game's really good, I want to buy it, and then the rest is history. So kudos to Nintendo for dropping them demos left and right.
Dropping them demos.
Yeah. And if you guys haven't played it yet, you should do it, because it's awesome.
That's really cool.
Play some Kirby Star Allies before it comes out, I think next week or in a couple weeks or something like that. It's coming
soon. No, it's on Friday.
Friday? Oh my gosh.
Yep.
Ah.
This week's actually a decent week for games. There's like,
oh yeah, it is.
This game, there's a remaster, there's a couple of remasters. Devil May Cry is coming out. What else is coming out this week? Burnout Paradise, isn't that this week too?
Oh god, it is. Yes.
Yeah, look at my list here. I haven't put that together yet. Or did I put it together? Let me see.
Wow. No, it comes out tomorrow.
Oh shit, really?
What the hell? I'm buying that. I'm not even going to play the demo because I've already played the full thing. Buying it. Oh my god.
So everybody that's listening, we're going to South by Southwest this weekend, and it's not a good week for video games to be dropping right now, because we're going to be busy with that and we don't have time to play these games.
Devil May Cry HD Collection is only $24.
That's awesome.
Oh my god. Oh no. I'm going to have no money left.
Goodbye bank accounts. It's gone.
I'm going to be so broke, but I'm going to be entertained.
That is true. Anyway, that's going to wrap it up for our video game segment this week. Stay tuned for our video game news. We're going to talk about Nintendo Switch, some Valve, some politics, and Fortnite, and new games that have been announced. So stay tuned, and we'll be right back.
You're listening to The Inner Gamer.
It is time for our video game news this week. In this segment, we share the best headlines that have happened in the gaming industry in the last 7 days, 8 days, maybe 4 days.
17 days.
17 days.
The last 30 days.
Seven.
Okay,
days
it's maybe.
Until you die.
No, don't do that.
The Ring is coming for you.
That's a shitty movie.
that movie actually freaked me out when I was a kid. I was so scared. I was like, oh my gosh, they're going to kill me. And then it didn't happen. But what's not scary is Gabe Newell came out and gave a talk. Gabe Newell is the founder of Valve. He is basically the guy that brought us the world of everything.
It took Half-Life, him a while. It took him a while.
Took him a while. But they've been busy. So Valve, as you all know, may know, developed Left 4 Dead and Dota, Team Fortress, mm-hmm. and Half-Life, mm-hmm. all those amazing, awesome games.
All these great games that get to two, but we just can't make it to three.
And then they brought out Steam, which is basically PC gaming. Like, it's the de facto standard for PC gaming, and it's blowing up. They had an event for their Artifact game, which is the upcoming digital card game for the Dota universe, and he talked about his company and made a statement that will surprise and excite some of you out there, including myself. Artifact is the first of several games that are going to be coming from us. So that's sort of good news. Hooray! Valve's going to start shipping games again.
What? I wonder if they're making a new Source.
Dude, that'd be sick. Source was so
maybe like, that's what huge. Maybe that's what they were doing this whole time. Because, I mean, Source came out in 2007 or something. What's the last game that that Valve made?
Left 4 Dead 2, Dota expansions.
But you can make that on that engine because they're not very graphically demanding. But right. What was Portal 2 made on?
Their last Valve game was Dota 2 in 2013.
They made Source? See, maybe they were just making a new engine this whole time, and then they're going to be like, bam, three, 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 all threes.
Source 3.
Or 2.5.
Half-Life 3, Left 4 Dead 3.
Luis, I would bet money on a 2.5 before I bet on a 3. Like,
yeah, yeah.
Like a 2.1.
Let's just do it the whole way through.
I don't know. I'm excited though. I'm looking forward to see what they're doing. They're brewing up, because it's been a long time and Valve has some smart people working there. So, and they have so much story that has yet to be tapped into. Like, I was so pissed off when they basically went dark on Half-Life 3, especially all the setup that they did at the end of Half-Life 2 episode 2. Or whatever that was called, that like webisodes or like episodic series that they put out. Yeah. I was like, oh my gosh, shit's about to go down. It's going to get real. We're going to Aperture Laboratories, the Portal universe, and this will unite together. We're going to take down those slugs. And then all of a sudden it's like, okay, Steam, it's updated. We have a headset that's VR. Steam boxes that failed.
I feel like you're delivering this with the exact same enthusiasm that their PR person would be delivering that exact news.
Yeah, right.
The headset, you guys,
it's so good.
Just give us an answer.
Yeah, I remember when the HTC Vive came out, everybody was like, HTC, maybe that means Half-Life 3 if you rotate it the right way and look at the thing in the certain direction. And
no,
it just wasn't.
Just stop.
Yeah, so anyway, that's exciting news. We have some more games coming out from Valve. That's going to be badass. Can't wait. But in the meantime, Nintendo is still killing it. I'm sorry we talk about Nintendo a lot in this podcast.
I don't give a shit. I love them.
Nintendo.
Well, we have to make up for like the other year and a half we just didn't talk about them.
That's true, actually. We didn't talk about Nintendo at all for a while. So now we are. They had a direct and there was a lot of stuff that was announced. I want to start with the Switch because I find that to be the most exciting. And let's just start with the big one. Super Smash Brothers.
Man.
Is my God. Freaking real.
What a brilliant way for a teaser to be released.
Done. Like, I know, I was like, oh, Splatoon DLC.
I was getting ready to get up my Switch and be like, ooh, man, what kind of Splatoon DLC do I got to get ready for? Ooh, this is going to be, wait, what's happening? And then I passed out.
Yeah.
From gasping too much.
Yeah. And then I woke up here. That was 1 week ago.
I want to talk for a second real quick on this because Smash Brothers, like, the last one was Wii U. And
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
They're like, what could be done or what needs to be done or does anything need to be done to make Smash better? I mean, they have new characters and stuff like that, but is there anything that's missing?
Keep the campaign. Keep obviously like all the fun characters that we get to play. To me, I would say let's maybe back off a bit on some of those subtle nuanced combat mechanics, like you've got a super and then you can build the rail, the ship rail thingy. And then like it does get a little bit too busy. I think maybe go back a little bit to the true to form of just characters brawling and not having to worry about assembling the 9 pieces to the key of time kind of thing in combat. Yeah.
Because
that would be just my suggestion.
Yeah. Because the Melee is like the most popular one,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Like that by far. Mm-hmm. And that one didn't have this stuff. Is
it
that
did
one
not.
Of the features
it didn't even have
that
the
people
super.
Like?
Okay. Yeah. It didn't have the supers weren't introduced in Brawl.
Right.
So I don't know. That's my opinion. Y'all can have your own two cents on that, but I say let's dial it back a bit.
I'd be okay
with
that.
Yeah. The formula doesn't need to change. The as far as like how tight the game is, this latest one was very, very, very good. Because the thing that people didn't like about Brawl is it was too easy. Like
yeah.
Parrying was the easiest thing in the world. Like you could push B and someone would be across the map and it would somehow parry them and then you would win. Like it's ridiculous.
Right.
I don't really know what they can change. Just add new characters. There's still no Splatoon representation at all. They can now add arms into Smash. They can add really anything new. They could add snipper clips, stuff like that, into Smash. So I think it'd just be cool to add some neat stuff like that and maybe do some more throwback skins or... Because what I really liked about the newest one is you could make your own character. They were actually pretty good. You can play as a me.
Nice, nice.
Yeah, I don't really know what else I'd want them to add.
Yeah.
I like that you can turn off all that stuff and just make it about combos and, you know, being better than the other person. Like, that's easily my favorite part, but...
I'll be curious to see if this game takes advantage of any of the gyroscope controls for the Switch, or if they keep it straight up. Just
they'll keep it straight up. They'll probably even release a new version or just start reselling the GameCube adapter.
If I could find a way to keep playing with a WaveBird controller, I 100% would. I think that's the only thing I would say. Let me continue playing with my GameCube WaveBird controller.
I was like, what is that for a second? I'm glad you said GameCube.
Dude.
Right there.
That was like the height of like Nintendo controls.
Yeah, I have that one. It was like the only analog controller that they have.
Yeah.
Awesome. So in addition to that, we have a lot of new things coming out. We have South Park Fractured But Whole is coming to the Switch. We have Little Nightmares getting a complete edition on the Switch. Undertale is coming to the Switch. We have Dark Souls getting an amiibo. We have Crash Bandicoot Insane Trilogy coming to the Switch. And then Project Octopath Traveler is not Final Fantasy, but it is Octopath Traveler, releasing July 13th. Who's excited?
It's literally a week before my birthday. If you need to give you guys any ideas, July 13th is a week, but literally 1 week before my birthday.
Damn.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I guess you're not going to get it to your birthday. That sucks.
Yeah. Do I want to wait a week to see if I get it, or will my fucking impatient ass completely break?
It'll be 12:01 or 11:50, like 10:59 whenever they release it.
I just keep refreshing the Mii Shop. Yeah.
Buy, and then you buy like five times on accident.
Come on. Man.
I'm really excited about that game, though. I didn't think I'd be so pumped about it, but man,
it's going to be so good.
That demo was fantastic, and I'm glad to see that they're doing some cool stuff with it, and it's coming out so soon. And again, like I said last year, Nintendo was killing it with like one release a month that was something that people are gonna be pumped about.
Yeah.
And with this Direct, it's pretty much that way. What else do we get? Hyrule Warriors is coming on May 19th. We have Mario Tennis Aces that's arriving in June.
I cannot wait for Mario Tennis, dude. I love Mario Tennis games. I love them.
I just want a
new Strikers game. Super Mario Strikers.
Oh my god. I haven't thought about Strikers in ages.
That first one was so good. I got so good at it that there was a part on the field that if you pulled up quick enough and you slid just past midfield, you could always score a goal because the goalie on the other side is always computered.
Yep.
So you'd always just like hold up on the stick and then you'd shoot it and then it would immediately go in the goal every single time. I wish they would like, because they did Mario All-Stars, which was all the sports games together.
Yeah.
Didn't really work out too well. The next thing they need is also Mario Party, but they just released one on the 3DS, which is another thing. Did you just mention Luigi's Mansion?
No, we're about to. Yeah, so Luigi's Mansion is coming to the 3DS this year. It's a remake of Luigi's Mansion. It will be out on 3DS. I'm glad they're still doing some support for the 3DS while they kind of, you know...
They still... I mean, there's 100, there's 100 million 3DSs out there. Like, yeah, of course you're going to do it. Yeah, fuck yeah. Warrior. I mean, I'm going to buy it now, and I don't even play my 3DS. I have to buy it.
Yep. And then WarioWare Gold was announced. Compilation brings together all of the micro games from the series history and all different styles.
It's like 1,000 or something.
Yeah.
Dude, WarioWare games were so intense, dude.
It really got ridiculous when you...
Because they're like Mario Party kind of, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, but they're fast.
They're like, really fast.
Every game
really
takes
quick.
Like less than 3 seconds.
And wow. Man, like... When they like, and what I loved about it is when they introduced the WarioWare level into Smash Bros. Like that was even like, holy crap! You could do some damage on that level. Everyone always like, oh, Zelda level. No, give me the WarioWare level.
It's a good one.
So next story we have. I don't want to talk too much about this because
I'm going to get pissed off again.
Because Devin's going to get pissed off again. But just a quick update on the White House. Video game violence controversy that's been going on for a while. They finally had the meeting that they've been talking about for a couple weeks. what upset me about this whole thing is whenever they brought to the table with all of the video game people that they brought out, which they did end up bringing the ESA there. They had a representative from the ESA, so that was good that somebody showed up from there. They showcased a trailer of violent video games, and afterwards President Trump was like, see, these are violent video games, right? I mean, they are. But the problem with it was this is like almost 2 minutes of video game content where they literally cut out pieces of people's heads getting hacked into and chopped off and things that
they made a video game snuff film.
Yeah. And you could totally do that with movies,
anything,
TV.
Here, let me do it with literature. Let me take out one chapter of the Marquis de Sade and say, this is what all literature does to people.
Yeah. Like the freaking 50 Shades of Grey. Just take that apart. I mean, that's awful.
It's not literature.
Yeah.
But go on.
It's terrible. But yeah, so they just like cut all these things together. I mean, a lot of it was Call of Duty, which Call of Duty is a violent video game, but whatever. You know, like the pieces that they took from here were showing the most hardcore versions of games, and that is a small percentage.
Well, it's
of
not even that,
are.
But you're taking literally all of these games completely out of context. Like, if you want to think about some of those violent moments in some of these video games, yes, they're violent, but they're also telling some like there's a narrative there that's not being spoken up for. I mean, Call of Duty 4 Modern Warfare, that has an incredible opening level, and of course it's violent. It's violent, but there's a horror of war story there. And, you know, say what you will about video games and the violence and, you know, oh, we need to limit all this violent media and everything else, but they can tell something very profound, and they can definitely illustrate a point that's much deeper than what's being displayed on screen. And if you are trying to demonize it just for the sheer fact that there's violence or sex or drug use or whatever, you're missing the point. You're seeing the surface level, and the subtext is lost on you, and maybe you just shouldn't enjoy it yourself.
There's a quote by Brent Bozell of the Media Research Council, and he said that, I think Trump is deeply disturbed by some of the things you see in these video games that are so darn violent, viciously violent, and clearly inappropriate for children. And I think he's bothered by that. So that's a statement kind of backing up his reasoning for why they're doing this. And my, you know, response to that is, these aren't games that they're showing that are made for children. Children should not have these games in their hands. There's already laws in place. There's already things out there that say this is rated M for mature.
We have an electronic systems rating board.
A 17-year-old is not necessarily a child anymore. They are about to be full-blown. I mean, they're going towards adulthood. So I don't think that saying these are games that are inappropriate for children is the right way to approach that, because these aren't games made for children, clearly.
And there's actually a new study out there. I may try to find the link so we could put it up in the show notes or whatever, but there's actually a new study out there by a Dr. Tyler Black that says about 80% of mass shooters show no interest in video games whatsoever.
Yeah.
So shut your mouth.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I get so mad.
Anyway, so that happened, and that's really, really crazy and everything, but video games aren't that bad, because I play video games, and I think I'm a pretty good guy, and I think a lot of us
here
are pretty cool guys. You know, we may get a little intense sometimes, but, you know, we're gonna go out and open the door for the person behind us as we walk into the McDonald's or, you know, whatever restaurant you might be finding yourself inside or outside of.
And then I'm going to beat him in Rocket League. Really bad.
Rocket League. Beat him at Rocket League.
That's violent. Shoot him in the head. And then I'm going to shoot him in the head.
Oh gosh.
Yeah.
Like, it's freaking crazy. Like,
oh
Trump.
Man.
Trump is so, he's such a try hard man. It's bad.
It's, yeah.
So what also could be good or bad, I'm not sure which way it goes, but in response to, I can't deny that this is a response in some form or fashion, but PUBG a couple weeks ago announced that they were going to be bringing PUBG to the mobile phones, which I was like, really? That's kind of weird, but whatever. Maybe people will play it. Now, Fortnite is coming to the mobile phones in Battle Royale, iOS and Android. So, not only can you play Fortnite everywhere, now you can play it even more everywhere on iOS and Android. What do you guys think about this? Fortnite on a mobile phone.
I mean, that's a... What is it? How many people are in the world?
A lot.
7 billion? Like almost 8 billion?
Yeah, we're pushing 8 that's billion.
That's like a billion people you can reach with just mobile phones. Fuck yeah, it's a great move. And I think it'll be fine. I think it'll be I think it'll be great. Like, you don't really need much on a mobile phone to play something like Fortnite.
Yeah.
I don't know how, like, if it's going to be the full game. I mean, if it's cross-platform, then yeah, but...
Yeah, it's going to be cross-play, which is crazy.
Like, I wonder how that's going to work, but at the end of the day, like, I think it's a great move, especially if you're playing on, like, a tablet.
Solid. Yeah, man. It's so interesting to me because it's such a different... Like, I never thought we'd ever see this actually happening. But, I mean, I guess Fortnite's one of those... I don't know. There's got to be... I mean, there's some skill to, you know, playing the game of Fortnite, and I can't help but say that iOS users are going to be at a disadvantage to PS4 and PC players because a phone with touch controls is not near as precise as a controller or a mouse and keyboard is. But... I like that it's coming to the Mac. That's really cool. They're doing a lot of stuff. Xbox One doesn't get crossplay, but that's because of Epic's partnership with Sony, most likely. But yeah, it's really interesting. I mean, it's the exact same game, same everything, and they're developing it for mobile. I'm very surprised by that. And Epic's response to that was that we believe this is the future of games, the same game on all platforms, console quality graphics and action, play when you want, where you want. And that is a smart move from that regard, because you can get it to where, I mean, we've all been saying in the past, like, it'd be great to have a console that you can take anywhere. Now you have the Switch where you can take your Super Mario, pick it up and go with you.
Yeah.
Well, now you got Fortnite, which is the exact same game, but you don't have to have the same device with you all the time. You always have your phone in your pocket. You have your computer at work. You have your computer at home. You have your laptop with you or whatever. You have all these devices. You can log into whatever device you want.
Yeah.
Download the game real quick. Play the game.
Yep.
You're good to go.
Just have at it.
It's crazy. Freaking epic, man. They're epic.
Why? Why, Brett?
I was
you were doing so well.
So good. Anyway, so that's pretty interesting. I'm curious to see how people respond to that. Last story we have before we move on to our discussion topic this week. Call of Duty Black Ops 4 has been confirmed. They are making Black Ops 4 as the next game.
Oh, man.
Oh, man.
So I played a lot of Black Ops 3 because I like playing shooters with my friends, but I really hope to get rid of wall running. That was so lame.
But I like it. Me too.
I just want, like, I want leaning. Like, I want to be able to do more Rainbow Six Siege type stuff.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, make it fast, but I want to be able to lean around corners instead of, like, you know, this little bobbing thing. Like, make it a little bit more tactical, and I think people will enjoy it more. And get rid of the damn running. Like, I'm okay with sliding and stuff. Like, that's, I think, pretty typical. Or, like, a head dive. Like, whatever.
Yeah.
But, no. No roll running. No boosting in the air. Like, that stuff is so lame.
What about
no double jumps?
No.
No double jumps? Oh, man.
Unless you have, like, a pogo stick, which would be freaking hilarious.
Coming out in the next DLC pack, pogo sticks and all that good stuff. Pogo sticks and rollerblades. That's what you're going to have to move
pogo
around
the sticks
level.
And rollerblades. Good Lord.
Oh, man. I don't know. I'm cautiously optimistic about Black Ops 4 because when, like, Treyarch is the ones that's developing this, and they've always been living in the shadow of Infinity Ward with Call of Duty for a long time until they made Black Ops. And then when Black Ops came out, it was like, holy shit, this game has a story that's compelling. It's interesting. It's different. It's original. And the numbers are fucked up. The multiplayer was good. And then they came out Black Ops 2, and it was also good. I felt like it was probably better. I don't feel like Black Ops 3 did that. I played it, and I thought it was a buggy piece of shit, and I stopped playing it. So that sucked, but that was on PC, though, so it could have been a different experience on console. But cautiously optimistic, because I think the story that they developed with Black Ops is solid. It's an interesting concept. And it's interesting how we're seeing a flip-flop, because last year we had, not a flip-flop, last year we had Battlefield 1, then we had Call of Duty World War II, and then this year we have Battlefield going just a step further into World War II again. And then we have Call of Duty now returning back to the future stuff.
Yep.
Black Ops 4. So it's kind of crazy. Crazy how that stuff changes. We'll see which one sells better this time around, because now they're completely different.
They are going to be very different, but does different doesn't always mean good. So
no, for sure.
I'm still not in the cautiously optimistic. I'm still just remaining cautious.
You stay cautious.
I'm going to stay cautious.
Stay thirsty, my friends.
That doesn't apply here.
Drink Dos Equis.
Okay.
Please sponsor us. It'd be awesome.
What the fuck? Low-key asked for a Dos Equis sponsorship. Fuck, Brett.
Anyway, that's going to be it for our video game news this week. If there's something that we missed, we want to hear from you. Email us at hello@theinnergamer.net, and we'll talk about it next week. Also, don't forget, if you like what you hear, leave us a review and rating on iTunes, because that helps us grow and reach more people, and we would be eternally grateful for you guys. So
eternally
and ladies
grateful.
And dogs and everything. So we'll be back after the break with our discussion topic. Stay tuned.
You're listening to The Inner Gamer.
So today we're going to talk about Ubisoft specifically, because Ubisoft is a thing that exists. They are indeed.
You nailed it. Thanks for joining us, yeah. Everyone.
Thanks for joining us, everybody.
Please
bye.
Remember to like, subscribe.
No. I'm just
kidding. No.
So yeah, Ubisoft has been one of those companies that you love and you hate at the same time, I feel like.
I will make no apologies. I've always been one that's I have a very begrudged feeling against Ubisoft in the past. Things are looking a little bit better, and we'll talk about why here momentarily, but it's to me, it's in the past, it's just been a company of empty promises.
Yeah.
And half-baked ideas.
Lots of games you're like, holy shit, that looks so good.
That concept is amazing. And then just delivering this mediocre, half-baked bullshit that I don't really even enjoy.
Right.
So we're going to talk today about Ubisoft and their business model. Touching on a couple of those high points, such things as their games as a service, some of their IPs and how they've evolved. And we have basically just touching on the past, present, and future and what it's meant for that company and what we can see or expect moving forward. So let's dive in. I don't like Ubisoft.
Why don't you like Ubisoft?
Man, I just said.
I did you?
I did.
Did you? Are you
just,
sure?
Well, yeah, positive? Just because there's a lot of games out there that like I can think back to some of my favorite games that I was like really getting stoked and excited for. I'll give a prime example of Assassin's Creed. When I was first looking at Assassin's Creed, and I was like, man, this looks amazing. This is like a whole thing going on. There's a really deep meaning behind what this guild means, this Assassin's Guild. And then I played the first one, and I was like, what the fuck is this? And that's what it was.
So let's go back in time a little bit. We're going to go back to the days of... I want to place us in... What would it be? 2016, I believe it is. When did Rainbow Six Siege come out?
2016, wasn't it?
Yes. So Rainbow Six Siege came out in 2016.
He asks with a mobile device at his very fingertips.
As he checks rapidly with his phone to ensure the accuracy of this date.
Yeah,
we
it
wait
looks
patiently.
Like, yeah, it was no. I'm so sorry. It was very close to 2016.
It was end of 2015.
December 1st of 2015.
Okay. So December 1st of 2015. Let's look back on that time. So Rainbow Six Siege came out. Originally, Rainbow Six Siege was not going to be Rainbow Six Siege. It was going to be Rainbow Six Patriots.
Yeah,
they had that idea.
They had the whole idea about the Patriots thing. And they jumped ship on that quick.
I think it was a little too close to home for some stuff. So they scrapped that idea, reinvented the wheel, and then came out with Rainbow Six Siege, which became a game based around very tight tactical combat with, what is it, 4v4, I believe?
4v4 combat. 4v4, really based upon that that sort of pincer striking, you know, breach and clear kind of tactics of warfare. Of, you know, if you're looking into like a really intense combat situation.
Yeah, and it's a really good game. When it first came out, though, back in December, it came out. People were into it, but for some whatever reason, it just did not catch on.
And that's the same problem they've always had.
It was just something about, like, for example, when I played it, I felt that this required a lot of dedication from my friends that I didn't think would actually come to fruition, unfortunately. So we never picked it up because it required a lot of time commitment.
Yeah.
But over time, Ubisoft started looking at ways to build out this, what we have talked about in the past as a games as a service model. And I feel like this is one of the first games that really pushed that to the limelight, because Rainbow Six Siege, if you look at all the past Rainbow Six games, they have always been a one and done kind of game type games. You know, you buy it, that's it. You maybe get some DLC, whatever. Well, Rainbow Six Siege has been an ongoing service from the day it came out to the point now it is one of the biggest multiplayer games out there on the market. But it did not have a good start at all.
No.
It was just bombed. And now everybody loves it and plays it all the time. It's like one of the most streamed games. It's blown up like crazy.
It has picked up the pace as far as the following that it has. And it's, I don't want to say that it's maybe because they've been listening to fans, or maybe it's because they're kind of changing up their model. And again, we'll explore some of these points here in a minute. But it's kind of like watching your favorite sports team. If they're a losing sports team and they start winning for a minute, you kind of turn to the channel and see them playing really well, and you go, "Huh, they're doing well."
They are doing well. Yeah.
Kind of what I equate to this, like Rainbow Six Siege is huge.
Yeah.
What is it, like one of the top five channels on Twitch right now?
Yeah, it's up there. It's up there for sure. So so that is the first game that kind of started this whole new business model that Ubisoft was kind of pushing for. And granted, they're still bringing out, you know, other games such as, you know, we have the South Park Fractured But Whole that came out. We have... obviously, we talked about Assassin's Creed, so they've been doing Assassin's Creed. They've been doing these one-time games that have some DLC packs and stuff like that. But another game that they started tackling with this idea was For Honor, which kind of came out of the blue. We didn't really expect anything of it, but it's like melee combat, Viking, samurais, and knights fighting each other in a persistent universe that's constantly battling for control between these dueling factions. There was a campaign to it. And you played more of this than I think anybody
did. Yeah.
So tell me your initial thoughts on the game and then how it changed over the however long it took you to basically stop playing. So I don't think you play anymore, right?
No. Yeah. No, I don't. From the moment that I saw the initial trailers for the game, or at least the conception of the game and the idea of what it was supposed to be, I loved it because I was thinking, oh my God, Vikings, I'm a huge nut about my heritage. And so I was like, oh man, Vikings, yes, my people, time to get in, fight for Valhalla. And I was, as we've kind of mentioned earlier, cautiously optimistic about what I was going to see from an Ubisoft game executing this kind of this style of play. And then as I saw more, I kind of got even more intrigued with the idea of what the combat system was. Basically an intricate rock, paper, scissors of what directionality is your character guarding or attacking, and then all the other different types of warriors from each faction, whether it's, you know, you're a big wielding sword asshole, or you got two tiny weapons, or if you're ranged, or you know, whatever it is. I became even more intrigued. And then as we started to play the campaign, it was okay. It's not great. By no means is it great.
It was pretty silly.
It was pretty silly. There's water enough for everyone to drink.
With Ubisoft in general, like, they're not known for their story.
It's just always the case. You're going to get a mediocre story, a very mediocre. There's a lot of plot holes, a lot of just like very recycled literary tropes, bad guy versus good guy kind of thing. And there's not a whole lot of substance to any of it.
Yeah.
They never have any kind of legs as far as the story goes. And then you have the multiplayer. And that's really where it was supposed to shine with all the factions. You got these seasons that kind of go along, just like with every other big multiplayer game, Overwatch, you know, Rocket League, Dota, League of Legends, all of them having their seasons. And we're going to enjoy this. And we're going to be the same thing. We're going to have our seasons, factions versus factions. You're going to be able to earn shit, you know, make your character or make your different loadouts for your characters. And it's going to be amazing. And then, man, that fell apart quick too.
Yeah.
Because people started manipulating the multiplayer.
That sucks.
It was ridiculous. You didn't have to do anything. They just basically did the Battlefront thing where you just put your controller upside down so your character just moves around and he's still got points or just being in there.
That's so crazy.
Isn't that dumb?
Yeah, you think they feared that. You'd think that's something that people would have thought of. At least a little bit. I don't know. But that's weird. So is that what killed it for you, or is that okay?
Yeah, me and a buddy were very into this game. One of my friends, we really did want to enjoy this. And he was big into the Knights. I was big into the Vikings, and we were gonna, like, you know, we would always be like, okay, well, a third person will join us, and we'll get in and play. You know, however many it was, like 4v4, 3v3, whatever it was. We're like, man, we're gonna enjoy this. We're gonna have a fun time. And then it was like 80%. I'd actually put like 85% of the matches we came across, there was always one to two people just running in circles, and we knew immediately, like, shit. It's just so this guy can soak up kills and bump his rank up quicker. So, man, it was just so defeating, because you wanted to play the game for the fun aspect of it.
Yeah, yeah.
Because a lot of those levels and stuff, like, it was fun, but damn.
So I wonder if it's something wrong with progression. That's the thing I hate about progression, is because people are always trying to game the system to progress faster when that stuff exists. But then progression, without progression in a game like that, would it get, like, would you keep coming back? You know, like, is there something that would, is the gameplay itself enough to keep you returning to the game if the progression didn't exist there to give you something to do when you returned?
How many people are playing Overwatch?
Well, that has progression.
Aesthetic progression.
Yeah. See that? So that, yeah. So that's a good point, though. So on that note, is that the progression doesn't necessarily have to be anything spectacular.
I mean,
could just be like you're just leveling up and then unlocking new skins to get more points you can buy stuff with, but not have it affect the overall gameplay. Plays Overwatch.
I don't play multiplayer games for the carrot on the stick. I don't give a damn about progression. I really don't.
Yeah.
I play for the experience and fun with my friends, because, you know, it's whether it's the excitement and the thrill of the multiplayer game that's neck and neck, we're tied all the way, what's it going to come down to, or the big sweeping wins where you just steamroll somebody, or those crushing defeats where it's like, well, we didn't get a single point, I'm going to put my controller down and go to bed.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the moments I love. Plus all that camaraderie in between when you play online with your friends and you're laughing, you're having a great time, you're talking, you're catching up. It's the community of it. That's why I play multiplayer games with my friends. I like that. I don't want to play a multiplayer game just so I can, oh, awesome, I unlocked Darth Vader.
I have unlocked Darth Vader.
Oh, good for you.
It's pretty fantastic. Awesome. So For Honor, we've talked about that a little bit. We talked about Rainbow Six Siege. A different one that I think I want to talk about in the past of Ubisoft's business model, which it's not that much of a past, but it's something that kind of is leading us up to what's our final discussion, which is The Division 2, which we'll get to later. But Ghost Recon Wildlands, that was a game that I was like so jazzed about. I was like, man, this game has everything riding for it. It's four-player co-op. It's a huge open world. You can like do all these things, unlock all these quests, like make all this shit happen. It's going to be amazing. And then it came out and, you know, again, same idea. It was like such a great idea, and then it just wasn't executed
so
well.
So poorly executed.
Yeah, because like once I got into it, like me and Louise played it a little bit before it actually officially released. They had like a demo or they had something you could do with it. And I mean, I love the ideas of like communicating with my friends and like, let's attack from this way and let's have two guys come in from this side and like tactically thinking about how you're going to approach it.
Yeah.
But then it just
marking your targets, yeah, and using your drones and setting, you know, setting up your squad the way you, yeah, perfectly want to around a compound or a one solitary house or a, yeah, like a whole base, you know, all of that sounded awesome.
Yeah. And I think with that game, what made it not succeed as well as I think it could have is the world, as real as it felt, was somewhat like, I didn't feel like there was a challenge awaiting me for anything.
Yeah. I didn't care.
I mean, it was just like going from like base to base to see these same types of guys. And this, again, the story wasn't that compelling to me. So that's like a whole nother point to it. But like, I didn't really once have any ambition of like, why am I going to go from point A to point B to point, yeah, C to achieve these objectives? Other than, yeah, I just wanted to, basically what it came down to was it turned into a Just Cause game for me, where me and Louise were seeing how far we could jump off the cliffs,
yeah,
and do all kinds of stupid shit.
Yeah.
And that's what it was. And that was fun for a little bit, but that's not something that's going to keep me engaged in it.
I didn't care about any of our protagonists, because why would we?
Yeah.
The gameplay was mediocre, you know, just kind of a fun novelty of riding dirt bikes off of a ramp into a whatever. And then just everything else was just executed so in such mediocrity. Even the gameplay portion of it, of marking your targets, that turned out to be a whoop-de-doo.
Yeah.
You marked them. Good job.
What do you think, in your opinion, it was about that game that made it? I mean, you said you didn't care, but like, what do you think could be done to make you care in that game? Like a better story give you more reason why you're attacking these bases?
I'm gonna make a comparison here.
Okay.
Did you play Borderlands 2?
Yeah.
That's the case I'm gonna make. That is a four-player co-op game with a story you gave a shit about.
Okay, yeah.
Your character that you're playing, your vault hunter, may not have been in, like, you know, a central theme character because it was a much bigger story being told. That way they couldn't, like, name you. But still, it was, you were a much more invested protagonist than you were from Ghost Recon Wildlands.
Right.
Wildlands, faceless soldier. Again, didn't matter how you made him. Could have a beard, cool mohawk, camo face, whatever. It didn't matter. You were a faceless soldier. And I didn't give a shit about any of that story.
Yeah,
none of it gripped me.
I guess that's like a charm or personality. Yeah. Like, that's the difference, I think, between Overwatch and everything else out there, is that every character in Overwatch has personality that you are attracted to. The world has personality.
The world has personality. And there was just none of that. And this is a problem that I just have with some sandbox games in general. As big as it is and as lived in as it's supposed to feel, it doesn't. It just feels like I'm in a playground. So.
Right. Well, anyway, so let's move on to like present day a little bit. Actually, not necessarily present entirely, but near present.
Near present.
In other words.
Yeah.
So we have three games that are going to be coming out in the future.
Yep.
Here. Two of which are coming out this year, one of which we don't have a release date for yet.
Yeah.
First one, Far Cry 5, that's coming out at the end of March.
Yep.
So that game is promising the same types of things Ghost Recon Wildlands has, but it's been known to have a compelling story in some sense of the word. Like, for me, not so much, but I haven't played an extensive amount of them to really get into any of the stories.
Sure.
But from what I've heard, Far Cry has compelling stories.
Yep.
So Far Cry 5, four-player co-op. I feel like this is the Ghost Recon Wildlands kind of game, but not to the extent of Ghost Recon Wildlands. Because Ghost Recon Wildlands is all about you pick your approach in every situation all the time. I feel like Far Cry 5 is going to be, despite the fact that it's open world, a little bit more on rails in a way.
Potentially, but I make the argument that Far Cry 5 is falling into the the well of absurdity because we're talking about a story about a religious cult. Good Lord, you got me gripped there. And then space monkey zombie adventure.
Well, I mean, that's going to be the best part about it, though. I love that. so excited for that. Not so much about the religious cult part, but yeah, I mean, like, you know, the DLC aside, like the game itself, it's, you got the religious cult thing happening. We have this 4-player co-op aspect where you can, you know, deck out your cars you get. You can, you know, do all this crazy stunts, do all these crazy stunts with your friends.
Hire other like mercenaries, whatever's to come and fight for you and get animals and whatnot.
There's so many things that can be done in this game are extremely absurd and busy. And it's like maybe they went too far with this one. I don't know what it is. Like there seems to be an identity crisis with every Ubisoft game.
Yeah.
Like they have so many good ideas. It's like they just have like a drawing board up on the wall. Mm-hmm. They're like, okay, let's think of all the things we can put in this game.
Yeah, I made this joke last time about how they do like the South Park thing with the manatees and riding South Park.
Yeah.
With the balls. And just kinda,
that's true.
I want to like Ubisoft games. I really, really do. I want to enjoy them, but they're just, they, as you mentioned, there's this identity crisis where if you can't pinpoint what theme or what feeling you're trying to recreate with your games, it's going to be a mess.
Yeah.
It's going to be super busy. I get so frustrated when I think about things like Ghost Recon Wildlands, For Honor, and it's like these... the conceptual idea of this is so awesome. And then I get worried with Far Cry 5 because I think the same thing. I'm like, oh my God, yes, a religious cult. That's going to be so fun. We're going to be looking at, like, you know, some historical parallels to things like Waco, but we don't have to say it. But I mean, that's gripping. I want to play that. And then I also see that they're doing monkeys space zombie fun, and what tone am I supposed to feel when I'm looking at these two? When I compare the two, what am I supposed to be feeling? A deep, immersive, dark, very gripping story, or am I just supposed to be like, lol, Jeep flips?
Yeah, that's a tough one. That's kind of the concern. I mean, that is the concern I have, is that what direction will this take? Because Borderlands took a very strong stance at this is silly, crazy absurdity.
It's silly, crazy absurdity, but it's rail. It was a rail story. It was fairly linear.
Yeah.
Yeah, you had some side quests, but they all took you pretty much to the same area.
Yeah.
So this whole sandbox portion of it, like trying to mix a deep story in a sandbox, I don't buy it.
Yeah, and they also said in this one, I think that this one has the ability where you can pretty much at the onset go anywhere and pick up any quest throughout. Like, so it's not like a set direction where you start here and then you have to complete these objectives to be able to go do this other thing, which, if that's true, worries me a lot, because that's, again, like, how is that story going to be cohesive if, like, you can go all these different directions with it? So I don't know. We'll see where that one goes. But again, has some concerns there. I want to flip in here real quick and talk about The Crew 2, because although it doesn't fit in any of these categories that we're talking about, it is a games as a service by Ubisoft. And it is a game that, like, Steep came out back in 2016. And I really liked Steep. I thought that was a really good game. I felt grounded in that, you know, they had the basic concepts. You could snowboard, you could ski, you could paraglide. All that stuff was there, and it was just explore the mountain and stuff like that. And if you enjoyed that kind of gameplay, then that's what you did. And you had missions. You could create your own missions. You could share them with other players. You could just meet up with players and just go do some skiing runs or some snowboarding runs. Like, it was... that was the game. And I thought that was a pretty good way to approach it. The Crew 1, on the other hand, was like, we're going to have this big, huge, open, like, you can travel across the entire United States. And then when you find out there's like 6 cities you can travel to, and then little pieces in between each part of the United States. So that really sucked. But The Crew 2 is coming out and basically being a racing version of Steep, in that you can fly, you can drive boats, and you can do planes, and it's all seamless and transitional, where it's got some absurdity to it, because, like, there's no way that you can, like, drive a car jump out in the water, press a couple buttons on your Comoros or whatever, and then all of a sudden be boating on the water. But that idea is compelling to me in that the complexity of the racing could be unique and different. And if they can make me interested in the types of challenges that they give you, allow me to join with my friends easily and play some racing games and do and create challenges for each other, like that would be really interesting. Yeah. There's a lot of potential there, and just an open world playground, like that is a game that I feel like needs a sandbox. You don't need a story there. You just need a good solid
that
sandbox.
That game that can get away with that.
Has good missions that are going to keep you coming back for more. Good progression system that can't be gamified or cheated through, like spinning around in circles and
you can't cheese through that, man.
Money or whatever. But you know, build it around that idea. I mean, it has the potential to do some really good stuff. And I hope they deliver on that, because Crew didn't deliver. I mean, it starts with the core mechanics being solid, and we know Ubisoft, like if they can do anything right, they can actually make games that play well. Like all the games play really well. It's just they have too many ideas and they can't bring them together to because cohesive. Like it's just like, let's take a grab bag of stuff, throw it into a game, and then see what people think. But then the game, the shooting is really good, or the racing is really good.
Yeah, it's like one or two things that are really friggin' good about it, and then just the rest falls flat.
Which brings me to The Division 2.
Now we have The Division 2, the game that I was highly anticipating for the first one.
Me too. Me and Austin were just like losing our minds every time they brought out new trailers. We're like, this game looks so good. It's going to be amazing. You can do whatever you want. It's going to be like just incredible. Like,
it's going to be a great
absolutely
experience.
Incredible. The story is going to be amazing. And then, I mean, you played way more of it. I never even bought the game. So, like, I played the demo. I was like, okay, man, whatever. Moving on. But
I didn't even buy it.
Tell me your thoughts on this.
So, I will give Division 2 had a great story. It really did.
Or Division 1.
What did I say?
You said Division 2. It's not out yet.
It's not out yet. Division 1 had a great story. At least I enjoyed it. Okay. Like, seeing all the, again, those factions were very well and well fleshed out. They had a lot of really cool depth to them, whether it was the Firemen or the Patriots or whatever faction you want to look at. Man, they were just fun. They felt real. It was like, man, some of this shit's intense. And they all integrated well into each like district of the map. And it was great. Where it fell flat was the end game. Like, we were supposed to know that the dead zone was like, oh, don't go to the dead zone. Don't go to the DZ. Don't. No, it's dangerous. Right. You get there, it's just a bunch of enemies with yellow health bars. And it was hard.
Yeah.
That's what it turned out to be.
And so so how long was like the campaign?
I'd give the campaign 15 to 20 hours, maybe.
So after the 15 to 20 hours of the campaign, the only thing left to do is go into the dead zone and fight other players.
Fight or help other players. And
so do they ever have any new like quests or any new content that came out outside of the dead zone that you could explore and interact with?
They were supposed to have some. I never got to explore it. I just got way too bored and other great games.
Right. Yeah.
Came out between then. So I never went back. Now, supposedly, and I'm getting this as a secondhand account from about four of my other friends who do still play it, and they love it now. They're like, they fixed the dead zone, all the gear and stuff that you get. They fixed the player interaction of stuff, how you can actually share gear now and how you can actually help your friends level up appropriately. It's kind of fell into the Destiny 1 problem of too little too late in a way. Yeah, but yeah. Supposedly, it's great now. I would like to explore the potential to play it again. So, I'm just nervous, man. I'm super nervous.
Because that was the concern I had with it is, I mean, like, for me, I didn't really understand the concept of, because I never played MMOs or anything like that, that religiously. I tapped in a few of them, but I didn't know what to expect from an end game. You know, like after you beat the main story, like what is there after that? And it wasn't until like I played Destiny that I started to understand what the end game actually was going to be. And you know, Destiny, as people have said, is not a very strong end game. Like you play the raid a couple times, and after that, it's like, yeah. Well, what do you do
yeah.
with yourself? You just keep trying to like minutely level yourself up a little bit yeah, and see what
you
happens. Just,
you would grind the same, just excruciatingly difficult part or area or level or boss or whatever yeah. over and over and over and over, only to get like, cool, I got the pistol I wanted. Pew, pew, pew.
Yeah.
It just like the risk reward was just not there.
Yeah.
It just didn't deliver.
And I feel like it's not to the liking of, I don't know if the Dead Zone was like this in the Division, but you know, for me, the things that have a lot of strong replayability are the games like Overwatch and Battlefield, in which, and PUBG even, where every match you do is a completely different experience, where you are kind of creating your own story as you're playing out that match
yeah.
because it's not going to be the same exact thing that happens. But
right.
It sounds like the Dead Zone has that potential.
It kind of did, but even then, like just some of the stuff you would come across, like it all it turned into was go to these same places you visited before,
yeah,
that you've been to before and that you've seen before. All this stuff is all the same to this same mission you've played for the fifth time now, and just tick down yellow health bars until they go away.
Yeah.
And hopefully another player doesn't come in and screw you.
Yeah. And it's all just shooting. There's nothing out. It's just like you're on the ground, maybe some little bit of verticality, but there's nothing else added in there.
Uh-uh.
Huh. Interesting. So let's talk on Division 2. They announced Division 2. They didn't say anything else about it. We know we're going to get a lot more content during E3. But with the Division 2, like what I'm kind of hoping to see is those moments where as you're playing through the game, like one, there's a progression system that makes you want to continue to level up and earn more gear and all that stuff, but also something to where you do create stories in the world based on the interaction that you have.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure how best that can be done, because like if I look back to games like Battlefield 1942 or whatever I played, and those experiences, the reason why those stories happened was because it was me and my friend, and I'm like going to a base to capture it, and then all of a sudden like a plane comes up out of nowhere, which is not scripted, just comes out of nowhere, and then I'm like, okay, I'm gonna pull up my rocket and just see what happens. I pull it out, shoot the rocket, hit the plane, it catches on fire, blows up, and then I capture the base. Like that was something that was not written anywhere. I did not think I was going to enter into that experience, and it happened. And it wasn't just, oh, I shot that guy over there and he died.
Yeah.
It was something that was, there was some more depth to that.
There was the more immersive style experience of a more realistic kind of combat experience that
words
could potentially be, yeah. Well, I hate using the term samesy, just because that's what Division 1 felt after a while. It was just so samesy. It was just the same thing. It was repetitive, and it just felt like the wrong kind of grind. And I really want Division 2 to get away from that. And I want them to explore that each area, even though it may be the same Manhattan Island, I really want to explore something new with each of them. Maybe we can actually unlock going into this building next time that we just have walked past 50,000 times on the way to a level. We actually get to go in it this time.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
Would be fun.
Yeah. I don't know. I'll be curious to see what they announce with it. I mean, like we've talked about in the past, they have all these ideas, and this is most of the games that we've talked about thus far are minus Far Cry and The Crew. Our first time experiences like Ghost Recon Wildlands. There's been other Ghost Recon games, but they've never been a Ghost Recon Wildlands type of game where it's open world, choose your adventure kind of experience. Rainbow Six Siege has never had this very tight four versus four tactical competitive combat system. Like they had Vegas, but that wasn't like the online multiplayer that this is.
Yeah.
Same with For Honor. That was a first of its kind because they never had that ongoing faction-based you know, like persistent universe mm-hmm. of like, because isn't it in For Honor, like the Vikings are fighting to take control of regions that they can take over from the samurais and the knights and stuff like that.
It was just each faction was fighting each other for just dominion over like what land was left.
Yeah,
and there was like this water shortage, and then there wasn't a water shortage. And each one was trying to like, the story was so weird. It was basically this woman wants to create perpetual war.
Why?
I don't know why. So that conflict didn't feel real.
Yeah.
Which is why it got very boring very quickly.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I hope Division 2 learns a lesson from these other games. And I hope Ubisoft takes note of this and that they stop making the half-baked idea part and instead take the good idea, take that concept, and polish it. Polish that rock, man. Just really give that detail the attention that it needs. Because we can't keep doing this, man. We can't. No. This cycle is not one that I want to be on. And if it comes to a point where we just keep getting these half-baked experiences, we're gonna run out of steam on that, and I'm gonna eventually just stop buying games.
I was gonna say stop buying games entirely. Man, you just bought so many games on the Switch. How are you gonna stop?
Stop playing games on the Switch. Go on. Keep playing Shovel Knight.
I'm really concerned about the timeline here because the first Division, I want to say Destiny, because it's a very similar story with both, and then their development. But Division took like 6 to 7 years. I feel like to develop. If I remember correctly, it was a long development cycle. And then now here we are, not even probably 3 years later, maybe four, but I think it's been 3 years since the Division 1 came out. And here we have a Division 2 already. So it's half the timeline to rebuild. I mean, obviously they already have the systems in place and they're just like reiterating on that stuff. And I think they were probably building a new engine with the Division 1 because it was a pretty good looking engine.
Yeah.
But there's still, I have some doubts about what it can do with the short amount of time that they've had to rebuild this entire thing that wasn't very good. Like, I don't want just a dead zone. I want multiple areas that I can explore and go out, and I want to have...
And maybe have your main area, but you can pull a Fallout 4, or a Fallout 3, excuse me, and you can say, oh, well, here's our main area. I'm going to venture off a little bit over here, maybe sail south to Rhode Island and see what happened there or something like that.
Yeah, that could be cool. So anyway, so that's our topic conversation on Ubisoft's business model. Not exactly what we expected we'd be talking about, but it's kind of interesting to have gone through like the history of Ubisoft games as a service over time and then what they plan on doing, because clearly this is something that's here to stick.
Yeah.
They aren't getting rid of this anytime soon. This is like their bread and butter, and they know it's going to make them a lot of money. So I'm hoping that, and it has made them a lot of money. So I'm hoping to see them improve and iterate upon it to where we actually do enjoy it more and aren't sitting here like, eh.
Well, that was okay, I guess.
It was all right.
Glad I spent $60.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So we'll see how it goes. But anyway, that's going to conclude our discussion this week. If there's a topic you want to hear us talk about, please let us know at hello@theinnergamer.net. Don't forget to check out our video of this segment every Thursday at youtube.com/theinnergamer. It may not necessarily come out this week because we're going to South by Southwest, but if not, it'll come out at some point in the near future. So make sure you subscribe youtube.com.
Wink!
You're listening to The Inner Gamer.
Looking forward to next week. Let's talk about our upcoming video game releases. We have, dude,
what's coming out?
Shit's happening.
What's coming out?
Ready for this?
What
ready
is
for
it?
This?
I'm ready.
On March 16th, we first have Burnout Paradise Remastered releasing. So that'll be here. I'm excited about that.
Yeah.
And then we also have on the Switch Kirby Star Allies.
What?
Kirby's back.
Kirby's back.
With
tell
up
a friend.
To three friends.
Tell three friends.
Tell three friends. Yeah. Slim Shady.
No.
That or was the fire breathing.
That was
guy.
The subtext. Just go to the next game.
Anyway, so on the 20th, we have three games that are going to be coming out. We have Attack on Titan 2 for the Switch, PS4, Xbox One, and PC. We have Titan Quest, PS4, Xbox One, and PC. And we have the game that I've been super excited about. So I'm going to take up all the time to talk about this right now. Sea of Thieves, Xbox One, and PC. Crossplay. Holy shit.
Steal your nerves, matey, for we be going on the high seas searching for treasure.
I'm going to get that Skelly Man.
You're going to kill the Skelly Mans. You best start believing in ghost stories, Mr. Yanosky. You're in one.
Give me a cup of that grog. Let's drink away as we
drink
sail
away
onto the seas.
Sail onto the high seas.
Yeehaw. Drop the anchor. I don't know why I said that.
Why did you go into a German accent? There are no German pirates, Brett. They're isoolated in Central Europe.
Guten Tag.
That
you
fucking ruined this. God, move on. Whatever. We don't even have any more games. Let's just go. Let's just go on.
All right.
Talk about how they can reach out to us.
So, sorry.
God,
that was amazing. Anyway, that's going to wrap up our show this week. Be sure and check us out next Tuesday for more from your favorite video game podcasts. You can visit theinnergamer.net for our latest episodes, blogs, videos, and social channels. If you like what you hear, please leave us a review on iTunes or tell a friend. And there's more things to be said.
Is it?
I think so.
Is it? Okay.
I don't know, maybe.
Well, we also have a Patreon, which is a way you, our listeners, to donate to the cause in order to bring you all the content you want to see and hear, even in something as little as $1 a month. That's $12 a year. Or you now have the option to give a one-time donation of just a lump sum. So please head over to theinnergamer.net, click donate to contribute. And if you do contribute, we have great rewards awaiting for you. Early access to videos and podcasts, exclusive content that only you get to do. You can join our Discord channel, play some video games with us. That's what it's really what it's all about, building the community. So please go donate, guys. And that's going to wrap us up. I'm Devin Dree.
I'm Bray Yanosky.
And you've been listening to The Inner Gamer. I'm glad we did it short this time because it's just the two of us and it sounds like a very sad birthday party where only like one other kid showed up and they're both the kids that don't get invited to play kickball. I'm kind of regressing into a really bad memory from school right now. So let's just fade it out from here into my sadness.
Fade, 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 fade.
Don't it.